Welcome back to the Ghost Bunny Podcast. I'm your host, Bridget Marquardt, with a brand new episode for you. My guest today is Kedrick Olson. Kedrick Olson is an author, speaker, teacher, and paranormal expert with over 30 years of experience guiding people through their supernatural and spiritual concerns. From early childhood and throughout his life, Kedrick Olson has led a paranormal life. Living in a haunted house full of spirits taught him how to connect with the spiritual realms. Growing up attending a spiritualist church, he learned the art of seance and channeling. His lifetime connection with advanced beings called the Whisperers gave him a keen awareness of the landscape of the afterlife and knowledge of how to work with various entities. His specialties include paranormal arts training, shadow work, runes, and Norse mysticism. He is the author of Runes for Transformation, published by Red Wheel Wiser, and has appeared on numerous shows and podcasts, as well as lecturing at events across America. Kedrick also regarded as a spiritual leader in the Norse pagan communities, leading rituals, teaching classes, and offering spiritual guidance through the challenges of life. He has appeared on Gaia's Beyond Belief, Open Minds, Deep Space, Ancient Civilizations, Paraflix Network, and many podcasts. Kedrick, thank you so much for doing the show today.
Hey, thank you. I'm really excited to be here with you.
I feel like your energy is so like soft and even, and I'm sort of like, wah! With my energy, I'm like, I feel like I need to like pull it in a little bit. Rein it in, Bridget.
Thank you for that. Sometimes my energy can get all over the place, but for the most part, yeah, it's pretty even keel.
It's very calming.
Thank you.
You know what? It's funny that you have paranormal arts training written underneath your name. And it was where I wanted to start because I was curious. I've never heard anything in the paranormal field referred to as paranormal arts. And I was wondering if you would tell me what that means to you.
Absolutely. This is everything from developing your abilities, learning how to open your inner eye so your clairvoyance works, so you could tap into your clairaudience, even clairsentience. And then we can expand on that to conducting seance, how to run a seance so that it's successful and safe for everybody, all the way to the point of being able to communicate with your guides and tap into the paranormal all around us. It's really the means of developing the natural gifts that we were born with, that we kind of shut down and were cut off from throughout our life, regaining those abilities so that we have full access to the spiritual side of life and the physical side of life. So I called it paranormal arts, just as a means so that it's more of an art than a science.
Yeah. Well, that brings up another interesting fact to me. Do you think that all of us are born with paranormal abilities?
I do. In fact, the way I look at it is, you've heard the saying that we are spiritual beings having a physical experience. I'm sure we hear it all the time. I don't think that's correct. I think we are spiritual and physical beings. We're having a dynamic experience. They both come together. So what happens on the physical can affect the spiritual and vice versa, which is why energy healing works. Because if we're healing the energy bodies, and we're getting that energy and the healing going on in our spiritual side, it'll reflect in our physical side. Consequently, if we're not taking care of our physical health, our energetic health, our spiritual health will decline. And because we are both spiritual and physical beings, it means we were born with both subtle senses and physical senses. We could see, hear, taste, touch. And as children, we knew this. We knew about the imaginary friends, is what our parents and teachers called it. We knew about the energies in the room. I've got two kids. They're now, 22, 26 years old. But when they were little, I would watch them watch the energies in the room. They would tell me about the lady that would come to visit them when they were sleeping. My oldest had a knack for energy healing. Nobody taught her how to do it. But when I really asked her what was going on, she's like, oh yeah, there's an angel that comes in and shows me what to do. And she moves this energy through me. And I don't do anything. I just let the energy flow through me. So we are born with these abilities naturally. We have our subtle senses and our physical senses. But because kids are kids, and what we need to do to adapt into our world, to live and survive in our world, we do it. And we see our parents not communicating with the spirits. We see the teachers not communicating with the spirits. We tell our friends about it. Maybe they laugh at us. Mom and dad tell us, oh, I don't want to hear about the imaginary friend anymore. Go to your room. And so we need to emulate the people that we're around because we need to fit in. It's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We have to fit in. And so we learn at a very young age, tune out, shut down. We don't have these abilities. And then for some of us, as we get older, it's like, oh yeah, I remember that. And those abilities nag at us, tell us to wake up and to use them again. But we all, every one of us has them. Some of them are stronger than others. Some people have them more intuitively than other people. But yeah, every single one of us have these abilities.
It just makes me wonder, like, if it was something that we would help kids kind of grow and nurture as they were younger, like where we could be right now as a species.
Absolutely. I'll give you two examples of this. A good number of my clients are parents with young kids. And a reason why they come to me is because there are paranormal things in their home, things that they want to understand. They're not necessarily afraid of them, which is great, mm-hmm. but they're curious about them. And so I tell them that I'm not going to teach their kids. I don't teach kids, but what I teach the parents, their kids will pick up on. The kids will see the parents doing this. They'll see them doing that. They'll see them having this little thing. And when something moves or falls off a shelf or something happens, mom and dad aren't screaming going, oh my God, get the exorcist. Mom and dad are like, oh, cool. Hey, how are you doing, Bob? You know, the lights turn on and like, oh, here we go again. So mom and dad aren't getting scared. Mom and dad aren't freaking out. They're just treating it like a normal everyday thing. And so the kids are growing up going, yeah, this is a normal everyday thing. And my second example is me. I grew up in a haunted house. I grew up where you could actually see the TV dial change, physically change. Radios would turn on. You know, you'd hear footsteps going up and down the hallway. And that's how my parents were about it. They're like, yeah, it's just the old farmer walking up and down again. So we went to a spiritualist church, which is like your typical Protestant church, but they have transmediumship at the end of the service. They had seances in the church basement every Saturday night. So I grew up knowing this was normal. I grew up with what I call whisperers, my guides, my teachers. I grew up communicating with spirits, knowing about the energies all around me. It did scare me when I was a kid because I was trying to reconcile what I saw in the movies and the TV shows, which are all fear-based, versus what I was experiencing, which was nothing scary whatsoever. So we can have a life, a paranormal life, absolutely.
Okay, you hit on so much stuff in there that I want to go back to. Like 15 different things. I was like, wait. Tell me about growing up in the haunted house. Tell me like where that was, what was happening, and if you know the history of it.
Absolutely. It's North Glen, Colorado. This was a very new neighborhood when my parents moved in. They had the house built in 1964. That's when they moved in. They were the first occupants of the house. But the area around there was all dairy farms. And so my parents suspect, and we don't have any confirmation of this, but they were able to suspect that the area where we were living was once probably the house where that there were farmers or some sort of ranch hands that died in that area. And their spirits were just kind of lingering, which is why there were the big heavy boots going down the hallways, which is why the toilet would flush when you would be on the different floor, the lights would go on. It was not like somebody being malicious or scary. It was more like, ooh, what is this thing? You have a toilet that flushes? We used to have just a hole in a piece of wood that we had to sit on.
In another room.
Yeah. You know, my mom collected music boxes, and it's understandable if one music box would go off here or there, but they would all turn on every now and then. Ooh. They would just all go on at the same time. At night, I had a hard time sleeping because I was very aware. I wasn't shut down. I didn't have anything cut me off. So I was very aware, but I didn't know about boundaries. I didn't know about setting space. I didn't know about, hey, leave me alone. I just knew that there were spirits now. And here's a weird thing about spirits, human spirits, especially if they're lost souls or other type of spirits. Most people don't acknowledge them. Most people don't recognize them because they don't have that ability. They're not open for that. And when somebody is going, oh, look there. Oh, look there. They go, oh my God, you can hear me. Let's talk. So I had a hard time getting to sleep at night, and I had to have the TV on literally right next to me just to create an electrostatic interference so that they would leave me alone. But I eventually learned how to set up wards, set up boundaries, and that now I can get a good night's sleep without having to worry about it.
You know what's interesting about that too? I have to sleep with the TV on, and I tell everyone that I need to do that because I can't shut my brain off at night. Like, I'm constantly thinking about my to-do list and all these things that I have to do. But I wonder if it has anything to do with also interference from something else. And I feel like the TV keeps my brain focused. I like try and turn it down kind of low so I struggle to hear it, but I do that on purpose because it keeps my brain focused on trying to hear this program that's on that I don't really care about because I'm really trying to fall asleep, but it keeps my brain focused on that.
Yep. here's a couple things you can do. Is when thoughts come up, acknowledge them and let them go. Because if we push the thoughts away, they tend to come back. But if you acknowledge and say, oh, hey, I'll deal with this tomorrow, and you really deal with it tomorrow, that'll leave you alone. Plus, when we're in a hypnagogic state, when we're between sleep and awake, we are more aware. We're more in tune with our intuitive senses. And spirits are aware of that because we're acknowledging them at an energetic level. And that's why people will connect with spirits in their dreams, which is, and why when they're waking up or going to sleep, they'll have contact, is because there's like somebody in the room going, oh, hey, you can finally hear me. Let's talk. So you can set those boundaries. You can say, hey, not in the bedroom. Bedroom is time for me to sleep. I can't communicate with you in the bedroom. When you hold those boundaries, if somebody goes poke, 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 you go, hey, I know it's important you want to talk, but we can't do it right now. We'll do that tomorrow. And then you keep that. You have like a meditation space, or you have a sacred space that you go into. And then you sit in that space and you go, okay, what is it that you wanted to tell me? And then you listen and communicate. And after you do those things a few times, your mind will leave you alone and let you sleep. And the spirits will trust that you'll connect with them when you're ready. And they'll connect with you on your terms and let you have a good night's sleep. I see it all the time with clients.
What about the difference between like spirits and then our spirit guides?
They can be very similar. In a weird sense, I don't like to look at things hierarchically, like a hierarchy, but there is, you know, we have like the ethereal realms, the astral realms, the numinous, all of those things, or sometimes we say third density, fourth density, fifth density. When a person crosses over, they're just a human being. When they get to the other side, they're just a human being. There's education, there's training. But as a person hangs out on Earth more often, or maybe they did their spiritual work when they were alive, or they did a lot of spiritual work on the other side, because you can do a lot of training. There's a lot of things to learn on the other side, a lot of school you can do, that you raise your energy up into a higher state. You move to like this higher state of being. And that's where you can be like a guide. That's where you can kind of connect with people, teach each other. Plus their soul groups. Like you may have a group of 10 or 12 people that you like and you hang out together and you say, hey, this is really cool. And maybe three of them this lifetime says, no, we're going to hang out. We're just going to kind of guide you and poke you from the side. So those could be guides too. So it depends on the level of training and the agreements. Sometimes it's people. Like when I work with clients, I'll invite my guides, the whisperers, in, and I'll invite their guides. And I see everything from past family members that they knew when they were alive to previous lifetimes to higher ascended beings that were humans that they never knew in a lifetime. Weirdly enough, extraterrestrials have been popping up a lot lately.
I was going to ask you about that.
So yeah, the guides run the whole gamut of the spectrum. It's amazing.
So everybody has spirit guides. Is that correct?
Correct.
Because I want so badly to tap into my spirit guides. And I've been doing a little thing at night before I go to sleep. I've been saying, all right, give me like a sign or tell me something, give me like some information, something, anything. I just want to know that I can communicate. And I feel like I have not gotten that confirmation that I'm looking for, that I'm speaking to or that I'm hearing anything from my spirit guides. But they tell me everyone has them.
Have you ever had one of those aha moments where you just suddenly got something that you were trying to figure out, we suddenly understood it? Or you had one of those moments where you knew something that you just didn't know how you knew it?
Yes, that I get a lot.
Or you feel like this pull to do something or not do something that you can't explain.
Yes.
That's how the guides communicate. They don't have language like we do. They don't have this linear language that we can process here. They have a non-linear, abstract language that lacks any context. So all you're going to get is like a nudge, an urge, a kind of a poke. You'll get a download where you just know something.
A download. I've had that.
That's how your guides are communicating with you.
But like, I feel like some people can control this. Like some people can like get information, like be like, oh, hold on, I'll be right back. And then they can like talk to their guides and then come back and be like, so here's the deal. But for me, I'm like, I'd like to have like some sort of information or like nudging on something. And I feel like I can't. It's just like far in between and out of nowhere and not even something that I wanted to know. And
there's a reason why I call them the whisperers. Their voice is so quiet that if I let my own thoughts run through my mind, I can't hear it. But when I go to that quiet place inside, that inner observer place, where I'm in between all of my thoughts, in between all of my emotions, I can pick up these subtle little bits of information. That's step one, being aware that the information was received. And remember, I said it's nonlinear, intuitive information that lacks context. You now have to process it through your own pattern filters, through your own understanding, meaning you will give context to that information. You'll put a reference to it in a way that you can understand. And that's where a lot of people get lost, because they don't realize they're receiving this information. They think, oh, I'm just imagining things now. I'm just making up stuff in my head.
Yes.
Which is, I've got 10 rules for interacting with the paranormal. The 10th one is the newest one. And it's every bit of communication with spirits is co-creative, meaning you receive that intuitive hit, but you have to interpret it through what you already know and what you already understand. And then you have the message. Some people are okay with that. They're okay with like, oh, this is just my imagination putting interpretation to it. And for them, it feels like communication. Other people are aware, no, this is my imagination and I don't want my imagination. So they shut down the communication. But what you really do want to do is when you feel that nudge, when you feel that information come through, feel free to explore it. Feel free to expand on it. Feel free to make that information something that makes sense to you, even if it feels like you're imagining it. Even if it feels like you're making it up, and I promise you, you're not. You're just giving it context and a reference that you can understand for that information.
It does feel like you're making it up sometimes. I feel like especially when you get something really good. And I don't, when I say really good, I don't mean like this juicy information necessarily. I just mean like something that like you're like, oh, wow, that makes sense or whatever. And then you feel like, well, maybe I just made that up though. But I got a download not that long ago, and a crazy download where all of a sudden I knew so much about something, and it even felt like I was there and saw it play out. And it was about somebody's personal life, a good friend of mine, but it was about their personal life that all of a sudden everything became so clear. And I knew all this stuff, like probably more than she knew about it. Cause I could not only see what happened, but I could feel how both parties were feeling, how she felt and how the other person felt. Like I saw the whole thing. And then I would think that I was just making that whole thing up in my head. But then I told her, can I tell you a crazy story that it just came into my head. I don't even know why I'm thinking this and I have no way of knowing this, but this thing that happened. And she was like, what? I'm dying. Tell me. And so I told her all about it. And it was exactly to the T everything that happened in a very like, you know, intimate setting.
Yep. I got a bit of a hit that was her guide giving you information to transfer to her. So it was her guide kind of tapping onto you and saying, hey, she's not listening to me. Here's some information that I want to pass on to you. And you did the right thing, which is another one of my rules. Test and validate every bit of information you receive so that you understand it. You went and validated it. So you're in tune. You're doing the right thing. So keep that up. Keep doing that.
Well, it's when you can and you can't always validate though. Like sometimes it might just be something that comes to you and you're like, well, I don't know where that came from. Did I just make that up? Am I just dreaming that? Like, what is that? This particular thing I was able to validate, but I was able to validate this, but I feel like you're not always able to do that. And so then that just makes you feel like it's part of, you're just making it up. It's just part of your imagination. But I'm bummed that was her spirit guides possibly coming to me, because I'm trying to talk to mine.
They're there. Just spend that quiet time to listen, that quiet space in between. And I've got a bunch of techniques. That's one of the things I sit down with my clients with, is they want to know how to communicate with their guides. And we go through over a few sessions. I teach them different communication techniques, different ways of processing in their mind, so that when they receive this information, they're able to process abstract information and receive it. And one of my favorite tools for that is a black mirror. I've got one right behind me here that's covered up. But that black mirror opens up that conduit for that communication, for that abstract communication. And so the more that you're getting familiar with the way the guides sound and communicate, the easier you start getting it. The more you can validate that information, you know, even if it's a pushback saying, no, that doesn't sound right. You're crazy. I'm not doing that. That's okay. They like that pushback. And so when you receive that, it just builds and it builds and it builds.
Yes, but I love that what you just said, because everyone always tells me, well, if you have to meditate and meditating, it's sort of like trying to go to sleep at night. Like I've got so many thoughts in my head and you can see my energy is like crazy. And meditating is sort of not really my thing. Like, I feel antsy. I don't want to do it. I don't find it helpful for me. And I know maybe if I tried harder or kept doing it, maybe, but I just don't feel like it's like the Black Mirror thing though. I feel like I could really get behind because I can let myself like stare at a blank TV. That's just like a black mirror basically, or even into my phone screen and just stare at it. And I'm not looking at my own reflection in there. I'm just like looking past that. And I feel like there's something about doing that where I can let my brain kind of like go in. It almost feels like you're going into something.
Yes.
Like a realm. That sounds so crazy, but nope. For lack of a better word, but it feels like you're kind of in, your like brain is sort of opening and you're kind of entering something.
Yes. I call it the mirror realm. You literally go to the other side of the mirror where you can't tell which side of the mirror you're on. And I, by the way, I teach people how to ground themselves. The very first times we're engaging with a mirror, I teach people how to go into the mirror, come back, go into the mirror, come back. And then we go through all sorts of different protection protocols and tuning protocols. So you're absolutely right. When we're doing that, you can go into another realm where your senses are not limited to the physical. Now you're using your subtle senses as a spiritual being in the mirror realm, and it makes it a whole lot easier to communicate. Absolutely.
Yeah, I feel like I've never let myself like drift too far. It's kind of like one of those things where you're sort of thinking about something else, but you find that you're doing it. Or I just feel like I haven't like gone too far with it. Like I haven't gotten some crazy messages or seen any weird things or anything like that. But I have noticed that there's something that switches in my brain and I kind of get into this like weird focus. Or it's kind of a non-focus in the real world and a focus on something else that I can't quite define.
That's really what I want people to know more about. Because of the movies, because of the TV shows, we think that a paranormal experience has to be this profound theatrical production, that a book has to fly across the room, that there has to be knocking on the wall, that there's got to be like this disembodied voice or an apparition coming into the room. When really, more often than not, you've ever had those moments when you had a friend or a loved one who died maybe years ago, but you're sitting quietly and all of a sudden you're remembering them, you're thinking about them, and you feel them and you remember what it feels like to be close with them. That's because they're in the room with you going, psst, hey, I'm thinking about you. It's that subtle. It's that quiet. Or you might be sitting at a red light watching traffic go by. All of a sudden the light turns green and traffic stops, but you're still sitting there at the green light, wondering why you're sitting at the green light, only to watch a car blaze through the intersection that would have just smeared you all over the street. That's a paranormal experience. It's that subtle. It's that quiet. And it's happening all the time to everybody, whether they know it or not.
And it's happening with pets too, right? Because when you were talking about a loved one and stuff, of course, I've had some loved ones that have passed away as well, but I specifically went to my dog. Like, she died a few years ago now, and so I don't think about her as often as I did at the beginning. But like just the other day, like I was like missing her so bad and really thinking about her a lot. And now it makes me think maybe she was here with me.
Absolutely. Pets do visit us. You know, I love ferrets. Ferrets and cats are my favorite kind of
ferrets?
Pets to have. I've got 2 cats, 3 ferrets.
Oh my gosh. And
ferrets, they only live about 5 or 6 years. But when a ferret dies, of course we miss it. We miss and mourn them. But we'll occasionally feel a cold nose on our ankle or our feet and look down and like, oh, hey, you came back just to say hi, didn't you?
Aww.
You can feel a cat jump on the bed, you know, just kind of hang out and you're like, look up and like, oh, it's one of you come back to say hi. So absolutely, that happens all the time.
I love it. I felt my dog, after she passed away, I could hear her little paws clicking on the tile out there. And then I also could hear, no matter how much I filed them or got them clipped, her toenails would get stuck on the carpet kind of, like Velcro when she'd walk kind of. So it was a very specific noise that's different than the cats, because cats have, you know, much thinner nails and stuff. And one day I heard clicking coming down the hall, and then I heard the Velcro sound in the bedroom, and then I felt a jump on the bed, and I thought, that has to be one of the cats. And I look up and the cats are asleep already, like sound asleep on the bed, but something just walked in and jumped on the bed. And so I think it was definitely her.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And in real life, she was too little. She couldn't have just like jumped on the bed like that. But I guess it doesn't. She's superpowers in her afterlife.
Yes, indeed. Actually, humans and pets alike, they have enhanced abilities when they get to the other side. You know, you hear so much about people saying, I'm on the other side flying. Absolutely. There's nothing limiting you. As a spirit, you move at the speed of thought. You can go anywhere just by thinking about it, just by tuning in and resonating with it. And so if your dog wants to come up on the bed, it just thinks about what it's like to be on the bed to hang out with you, and it's there.
Yeah.
And it's just instant like that. Absolutely.
When we're talking about spirit guides and everything, how is it different, or maybe it's not different, with the Akashic Records?
The Akashic Records are interesting. They seem to be, my best understanding, is like the holographic nature of our universe. The universe is a reflection of itself in all ways. You know, like if you take a hologram, you can cut it in half and cut it in half, cut it in half, that sort of thing. And so we look at the universe as a reflection of itself. So in the tiniest of all things, you can pick up all the information of everything. It seems to be holographic in that sense. And so I think the Akashic Records are the same kind of thing. They're just different mythologies put to it. You know, in the Norse terms, we have the Elabog, or the 11 rivers, or the Akashic Records. You know, I've been to the library and read books. You know, they're not reading, but you're just picking up information. And the way that I come to understand it is those are mythological constructs that we put onto it. Remember I told you about we give context to something? This is the context we give so that we can tap into it. I'm really starting to think of magic and paranormal arts as a universal consciousness interface, a UCI, because everything is consciousness. I think time, space, everything is consciousness. And when we're tapping into the Akashic Records, we're tapping into that holographic nature of everything that knows a past, present, future, possibilities and probabilities layered so that you can see what could have been or what will be as possibilities and probabilities. Now we put the records and we put the library, we put whatever as a mythological construct so that we give context to that information. But I think it's still something a lot more vast than we can quite comprehend with the physical brain.
When I think of the Akashic Records, I think of it as this huge, I guess like library or office space with all these filing cabinets, and it's messy as hell. Like I feel like there's papers everywhere. There's like, there's organization, but like no organization at the same time. I feel like it's a crazy mess, and it's as vast as like it's never ending. Like it just keeps going and going, and going file cabinet, and it's dusty. That's my vision of what the Akashic Records look like in real life.
I love it. It makes sense too. And if that works as an interface to tap into it, go with it. You're not wrong. If it works, 100% keep using it.
And when you want to tap into it, there's like some little ghost stuff, like a Casper, like looking little ghost. That's like, which file cabinet was that in? I can't remember. And he's like the ditzy professor guy. And
that thing I will agree with you on. There seem to be keepers of the records or librarians or people that just know how to navigate that information field. And if you ask them, they know how to find that information for you. And I agree with you. They're definitely some sort of caretakers there.
Yeah, it feels like it. Definitely. I have a question about a dream I had, because you brought up dreams a little bit ago. I rarely remember my dreams. And even if I try to write them down the next morning, the second I just go to grab my phone or a pen, it's gone. Like it's just, I can't do it. But I do remember the other night that I had, and I don't even know why, I don't even think of this animal ever, but I had an ermine in my dream. And then I got awakened and I fell asleep. And I know that I had a second dream about something totally different. And there was an ermine in that dream too. And I remember thinking to myself as I'm sleeping and dreaming, two ermines in two different, dreams? Like, what does this mean? It has to mean something. And I woke up and I looked it up online. Like, what does ermines in your dream mean? Zero. There's zero information out there.
Well, let's do this real quick. In both of those dreams, when you look at the ermine, when you experience the ermine, you may not have words to describe the feelings that you get, but that's okay. Can you remember how being around that ermine made you feel?
The first time, I just remember it scurrying across the room almost like a rat, and it got flat and like went under a doorway. And I remember thinking, oh, what was that? Oh, that was an ermine. That's it. And then the second dream, I remember thinking, this is the second time I'm dreaming about an ermine. Why am I dreaming about an ermine?
Well, okay, that second dream. That second dream where you like, okay, you're thinking about an ermine, you're dreaming about an ermine. Can you tap into inner feeling? It could be like an emotion or some sort of an inner feeling connected to that ermine.
No.
No? That's okay. Let's do some word thoughts then. When you think of an ermine, what kind of thoughts or feelings come to mind when you think of an ermine?
Honestly, like it's not an animal I really think about, but I guess right? I've seen one only in real life one time. And I remember being shocked because I thought it was a white squirrel. And then somebody was like, no, that's an ermine. Do you see the little black tip on his tail? And it was actually in Colorado. And it was at the top of a ski resort. And it just like hopped off and into the forest. And it's the only time I've ever seen an ermine. And in my dream, it didn't even look like that. It looked like, it didn't look like, it, I, my head knew it was an ermine, but it was like gray and white and... it was multicolored.
So I tell you what, I'll give you some homework.
Okay.
In just some quiet contemplative time, even let your thoughts go. You know, I know you said you have a lot of thoughts come up. Cool. Recognize the thought, let it go. But just think about that ermine in your dream. Just think about it in any feelings that come up, any sort of a feeling that pops up, any words that come to mind, doesn't matter. No judgment, no criticism. Just observe what that is. Just kind of breathe into that. Breathe into that. Make it a little bit stronger. Another thought pops up. Cool. That's great. I'm thinking about the ermine right now. And just kind of think about that feeling. And this is where I want you to get creative and playful. And this is so critical. This is one of the other reasons why people get disconnected is because they take it so seriously that they lose the connection because like, I've got to have an answer. I've got to have a... instead of just playing with it. I want you to play with this and treat it like a game. If that ermine wanted to talk to you or that feeling about that ermine comes up, what would that say to you? What kind of words would come to mind? Doesn't matter what they are. Could be even as silly as like, row, row, row your boat. Just anything. But just play with that and see what comes to mind. And then the thing to keep in mind from that is that ermine might be a symbol for something going on. It might be a symbol that your subconscious is trying to communicate to you. That feeling and those words and that free association that you're playing with will reveal what the ermine is all about.
All right. I'm going to work on that tonight. What are your thoughts on people who can like teleport, especially during dreams and stuff, but not even dreams, like can just like be sitting in a room, but like be teleported somewhere else?
Ah, their physical body is still here, but their mind, their astral travel, astral projection.
Yes.
My dad used to do this all the time and I do it too. And a lot of people do it more often than they think they do. Remember when I said spirits move at the speed of thought? You're a spirit too.
Yeah.
There's nothing stopping you from moving at the speed of thought. And so when you're in that dream state, when you're in a place where you're not so attached to the body, you can think and feel of another location and go there. You can do it intentionally when you learn how to do it. Quite often we do it in dreams without realizing that we're doing it, but it is just the soul exploring. And by the way, don't worry about any of these notions that you're going to get lost or that you're going to get cut off from your body or that something's going to sneak into your body when it's gone. You know, I love the Insidious movies. They're fun, but it's not like that at all. You are a spiritual and a physical being. You have a dynamic interconnection. The moment you feel a little bit of fear, a little bit of concern, you're back in your body. You can't get cut off. So feel free to explore. Nothing can steal you. Nothing can trap you. You're always attached to your body, you always come back. And it is a natural ability that we all have that we can just get up and explore.
Yeah, my stepdad, and he's not like into the paranormal or anything like that at all, but he is able to do that. He's told me about dreams that he's had and things that he's seen and places he's gone. And I'm like, wait, you can do that? And then my sister, she's my half-sister, so she's my stepdad's real daughter, also has the ability to do it too.
Yep.
And neither one of them are like into the paranormal or like study this or are trying to do it or anything. It's just something that they've like mentioned nonchalantly, like that they've done this. And I'm like, what?
Yeah, it's right. Everybody has these paranormal abilities. Just some of us may have some stronger than others. They just have naturally that astral projection ability. And it's just a natural, normal thing for us all to have.
Yeah. It's so interesting. Like, I wish that I could harness that and do more of that or any of that. I don't think I've ever, maybe I've done it, but not that I know of, you know, consciously.
If you've ever had a dream where you were flying or you were in a place getting taught something or teaching something, chances are that was an out-of-body experience when you went and explored and had some fun.
Yeah. You said there's a quote in there that says, I work with people who want and need to take their life and performance to the next level. Is this sort of a form of like manifesting? And like, I have another podcast, Girls Next Level, where Holly and I talk about how much we love to manifest and like making visualization boards and stuff. And it's something we do year round, but it's especially like a fun project to do, like kind of like a New Year's resolution type thing, except for, you know, a New Year visualization board and stuff. Is that some of the types of things that you help people with, like manifesting, making your dreams come true type of thing?
Sort of, yes. Because in addition to paranormal arts, I call myself a shadow worker. Instead of a light worker, I'm a shadow worker, meaning we do shadow work. And this is one of the key components that gets missed in manifestation work, is in the old days, you know, back in the old hermetics, back in the old... when it was a cult, you know, we're out of the age of the occult. We don't need the occult anymore. But back in those old days, they had a saying, solve et coagula, to dissolve and then to reform, you know, to coagulate, to dissolve. And the reason why we do shadow work is anytime you're ready to level up in life, this could be getting married, having children, scaling up your business, getting a promotion at work. Anytime you're ready to step up, you have to let go of the comfort zones of who you were. You have to let go of the limitations. You have to let go of the self-limiting beliefs and the self-sabotaging behaviors, which is why we got to do shadow work so that you can level up. So you can do the vision boards. You can do the affirmations, and they work. They're great. You can do the law of attraction. You can do think and grow rich. That's great. But if that shadow part of your inner world isn't ready for that to happen, doesn't believe it can happen, it's going to scatter that. It's going to mess that up completely. So I help people with a spiritually based shadow work approach where we can go into like, great, what is it that you want to level up to? What are the difficulties? What are the things holding you back? What are the patterns that you're seeing? And then I've got a whole toolbox of shadow work for all types of people, for all different kinds of walks of life that we go through, and we clear those limitations so now they can manifest their heart's desire easily.
Okay, so let me back up a second. What is a shadow and what is shadow work? Because when you first say it, it sounds spooky to me. It sounds like these like dark things lurking in the corners and they're not good. And
that's why I tend to tell people I work on the darker side of spirituality so you can find your own light. A shadow, and this goes back to Carl Jung. A shadow are like the thoughts, the feelings, like the shame, the frustration, the limiting doubts that we stuff down inside, that we don't want to acknowledge, that we don't want to look at. You know, maybe we made a mistake, or maybe we had a secret dream when we were a kid and mom and dad said, oh, that's just stupid. Or the kids teased us about it. So we pushed it down and we forgot about it. Or maybe we just have fears and somebody told us, you know, when we were kids, oh, you'll never be able to do that. You'll never be able to do that. You'll never be able to do that. We hear that so much and we stuff it down. And now we're ready to scale up. We're ready to go the next level of things. And that little voice, you'll never be able to do that. You were never good at doing this. You were never good at doing that. Why are you going to do it now? That's a shadow. And now maybe it is that secret dream that you've always had that you wanted to do. Oh, no, if you do that, you're going to be a bad person because that's really dumb to do that. Those are the shadows again. And when we do shadow work, we're bringing light in. The light of awareness, the light of acceptance, the light of understanding, so that we understand what the shadow is, where it came from, how it thinks it's helping us. That's one of the key things about shadows. They may be the dark, scary places inside that we're afraid to look, but every single one of those shadows that we all have, and every single one of us has them, but every single one of those shadows thinks it's helping you in some way. And so when you push it down, you say, no, I don't want to hear this. I don't want to think about this. I don't want to do that. It just locks it in tighter. But when you can address it, when you can look at it, when you can understand it and accept it, and here's the weird thing, have gratitude for it. Have gratitude for that self-limiting belief. Have gratitude for that inner dialogue that says you're not worthy. Have gratitude for that inner thought that just says, nope, you can never do it. Have gratitude because it helps save your butt for some reason. But when you have that acceptance and that gratitude, it loses its hold. It lets go. And you understand more about yourself, your authenticity. Because why was it there in the first place? What was it protecting? How was it helping you? So you understand even more about who you are. So shadow work really is about taking your life and your dreams to that next level by addressing the darkness that you've got inside instead of hiding away from it.
Interesting. I feel like I've had to like tell those shadows to go away so much my whole life, like just to be where I am today. Like there's so many times that you have to be like, you have to tell that to go away.
Yep. Exactly. We got to work on those shadows because We all have them. And every, you know, even right now, what was working for you right now, 5 to 10 years, might be a shadow that you have to work on and clear away.
Yeah. And I definitely feel them now too. Like, you know what I mean? Like telling me about the next step that, no, you can't do that for whatever reason, or you shouldn't do that, or that's never going to happen. Come on.
Right. We all have them. They're all there, and they're there to protect you. They're there to keep you safe, but they're also limiting you and holding you back. And so when you can make friends with them and make allies with them and find out what they're really doing, that will propel you to that next level even more, even an accelerated rate. It augments your authenticity.
Yeah. I also wanted to ask you about the whisperers that you talked about. You describe them as advanced beings.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what they are.
I don't know. They've been with me my whole life. I remember being a kid in elementary school on the playground talking with them. I remember them, you know, in my room when scared out of my mind, what is going on? What's going on? Them trying to tell me what's going on and me trying to make sense of it. Driving in the car, taking a walking meditation, getting new lessons. They're still with me. I don't know. They are the ones that I currently have. Have never had a human body, never had physical form. In the past, there were some that did. I do have a couple of interpreters that come along that had human form, but they are just spiritual beings. They're guides, spirit guides, teachers. And the reason why I call them whispers is because their voices are so quiet that you can't hear them with the normal thought. You have to kind of quiet your mind to hear them. But yeah, they're advanced beings. They're ascended masters, angels, whatnot, whatever you want to call them. Higher level beings that just bring their teachings to this world through the stuff I'm doing.
But they are essentially spirit guides.
Yes.
And they change?
Yes.
Interesting. I don't know why I felt like we have a set of spirit guides or a spirit guide that's kind of like with us, and that's kind of like the one that's with us or the few that are with us the whole time. I didn't realize that they change.
Yep. You might have some that last your entire lifetime. Absolutely. Especially if it's soul group. You know, if you get a soul group, they'll hang out with your entire lifetime. Your own higher self, your own version of yourself that exists in a higher state of being, that part is with you your entire life, connected with you your entire life. The rest can come and go depending on what you need. Like when you're a kid, maybe you need to learn certain lessons on resilience and growth. And then when you're an adult, maybe it's, I don't know, the application of wisdom. And you'll have guides that pop in and out. And like when I work with clients, they'll all show up sometimes. Like sometimes somebody's working on being a little more organized, a little bit more structured. And they'll have a guide that comes through as like super uber business person that just, you know, like, here we go, tight. And sometimes they need to learn to be a little bit more playful, a little bit more laid back, because that opens them up to that deeper wisdom. And they might have a little kid that comes in and says, hey, remember to play. So yeah, they come in all sorts of different kinds and flavors for sure.
And they can pull from what you need then, it sounds like.
Absolutely. The key rule in interacting with anything paranormal is similarities attract and perpetuate. And because they are there with a certain homogenous energy to you, because of their normal, their personality state, it helps to build that energy also within you. So there's already an energetic connection, but let's say this one's a little bit more playful. And because she's around being a little bit more playful, it'll boost up your playful energy just by being there, just by being in the same room. So even though you don't know that they're there, a lot of people don't know that they're there, just reaching out and saying, hey, I need some help with this. Hey, I need some guidance on that. All you might feel is just an uplift of energy. You might feel a little bit of playful energy. You might feel a little bit more resilient energy. You might feel like, okay, I just need to buckle down and do my taxes kind of energy. That's a guide coming through and sharing their energy with you. So it's that subtle, but they're there. And all you have to do is just ask.
Yeah. It sounds spooky, like shadow work and whispers and things like that. But also when you were saying about ancient beings, it made me think alien. And what are your thoughts on all of that? Because it's a big topic right now. Like there's so much coming out about aliens and like what we know and what we don't know and how much they affect us. And there's like there's some crazy theories out there and everything. Like, what are your thoughts on all of that?
If you would have asked me this about 10 years ago, I would say, I don't know. I'm open-minded to it. I have had alien experiences. I've had, you know, definitely experiences with aliens, you know, like finding myself floating in a room with green light and then in a room with a bunch of little beings and an older man saying, do you remember the numbers we gave you? Things like that. But working with my clients over these years, remember I told you I invite their clients in?
Yeah.
I started to notice blue people showing up a lot lately. Now it's stick people. But blue people would show up and I'm like, what are you? Why are you like this blue person? And it's an extraterrestrial. It's a being that had a physical form on another planet. And I'm like, okay. And as I got familiar with those energies of those blue people, I started to notice those energies in my clients too. And I'm like, you have the same energy as your guide does? Does that mean? And then I came across the whole starseed term and I'm like, got it. Now I get what you're talking about. Yes. And so I am seeing it more and more. Like I said, stick people come in. They're beings that never had human form, but they look like a long stick with arms and legs. I don't know how to describe it. But they're another type of energetic species. But they've been showing up more and more. Now, even though I grew up in a paranormal world, even though I'm around this all the time, I'm still a skeptic. You know, somebody tells me that their lights are flickering on in their house, I'm going to have them call an electrician. You know, we're going to cover those bases first. And so when it comes to extraterrestrials, I still would love to see the craft land in front of me and something come out that's not human. I've yet to have that happen. I had a vivid dream, like super vivid. I've never had a dream so vivid as when I was talking with an extraterrestrial being. It was like, I couldn't believe how crisp and clear vivid that dream was, to the point where I'm not certain that it wasn't a dream. But the fact that I'm seeing these beings show up more often, that they're in my clients, I debated this too for a while. I spent a year with my whisperers, gave me an 8-week shadow program, shadow work for starseeds, talking about healing the starseed wound. And I'm like, no, that's not what I do. That's not what I do. It's not what I do. And I'm like, yeah, it is. And working with students in a couple of my other shadow programs, and I just kind of casually brought this up. And they're like, oh, I wish you would have done that because I would love to take that course. And I'm like, what? And then throughout those 3 weeks, I was really debating about bringing this heal the starseed wound out. Every single one of my clients, every one of them brought it up about star seeds. They brought it to me. Even clients that I'd been seeing for years said, hey, I know we've never talked about this, but I'm feeling this otherworldly connection. I'm like, all right, I get the message. I'll put this course out. I'll do this work now. So it was something I had to just drag my feet on and have the knockdown, drag out fight with the whisperer saying, I'm not doing this, but I'm seeing it so much. I can't deny it.
I wonder why, because I mean, I don't know much about aliens, but I wonder why it's coming out now. It seems like they've been around forever, but why would it be more prominent now?
We are at a very interesting threshold for humanity. More and more people are accepting of paranormal abilities. They're accepting of our spiritual nature, and that's inviting us to cross a threshold to evolve to a higher state of being. Some people see this as timelines converging, like we can have a choice of going through a destructive timeline or a positive timeline, or some people see it as like the grand illumination of all of humanity. It's nothing like that. It's just more and more of us are coming online, becoming more and more aware. And as we're doing that, it's affecting the collective unconscious, that when we can see something, when we can perceive it, it puts it into that collective unconscious. And it makes it easier for other people to do that. And so these higher advanced beings are coming here now because they cannot directly interfere. They can't come in and say, oh, great, here's a economic system that works. Here's a political system that works. Here's how the medicine works. They can't come in and control and take over. They just can't. It's not allowed for whatever rules there are. There's some rules out there somehow. But what they can do is teach. They can guide. They can show us the way. They can open the door and then we can go through the door. And then that inserts that information into the collective unconscious, which is what's needed right now so that we get that critical mass that more and more people are like, oh yeah, hey, this is just how things are. And they're tuned into it. I think we're at a key point of human conscious evolution. And this is their influence to help get that tipping point so we can reach that.
Going back to your childhood, you talked about communicating with the whispers and going to a spiritualist church. Your family was very open about this kind of thing. Did they also go to a spiritualist church? I know you said that it was something that they kind of did at the end of the church session, right?
Yep.
So your family was very involved in all of this, or?
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember being a very little kid going to this church, and then my parents wanted to be normal And then they scouted out other churches, and we went to a Lutheran church for a while until I told them I was seeing things and communicating with spirits. And then they said, okay, we got to go back to our old church. And then we went back to the spiritualist church. But yeah, it's your typical Protestant church. Stand up, sit down, stand up, sing, sit down. You know, but then 1 to 3 trance mediums would go up at the stage, and they would go into a trance and do channeling. And all sorts of messages would come through.
Huh. That's so interesting.
Now, my sister and my brother are not into this. My sister's still scared of all of this.
Really?
Yeah, she's 7 years older than I am. And when she would hear the toilet flush, she would freak out. When she'd hear the boots going up and down the hallway, she'd get scared, which was hard for me to reconcile that as a little kid. You know, she'd babysit me and we'd hear these things, and I'm trying to reconcile the fear. I'm like, this isn't a scary thing. This is just a person walking around. But she'd be like, oh my God. Even now, if she sees me with a Ouija board, she's like, I don't think so. And my brother, who's 13 years older than I am, I'm the baby, he became a doctor. And my mom always said he was the most psychic of the family. But he just completely shut that down and went to a materialistic way and has no interest in this at all whatsoever. So it gives me scratching my head. I'm like, we all grew up in the same house. Mom and Dad were aware of this. I was aware of this. Why is it scaring one of you and the other one is just completely not interested? It's their life path. Those are those lessons that they need to get in this lifetime. That's their path, and that's cool.
It's interesting that you say that because my first paranormal experience, I don't think it was really my first paranormal experience, but my first like big one, and it was after playing with the Ouija board and everything. And I played with my cousin, and my cousin, because we had sort of a crazy experience, my cousin turned super religious, is super scared of everything about this, doesn't even want to talk about it anymore, about what happened. And she like doesn't even like going to like say the Winchester house. Like I was hosting an event there or whatever, and she was like super freaked out about even being there and stuff. And there's nothing nefarious about the Winchester house. It might be haunted, but not by anything bad or anything weird or crazy or anything. Like there's nothing wrong with the Winchester house, but she just went like the total opposite direction, like wants nothing to do with all this stuff. And like, everything's evil and scary. And I went like the other way. I'm like, no, I need to know more. I want to learn about this. I want to like just dive in.
It fascinates me how two people can experience the same thing, but walk away with a completely different interpretation of the experience.
Yes.
In a sense, this reminds me of Maria. Maria showed up during seance. You know, when I was doing some seances, Maria showed up and she was curious. She was like, what is this? What are you guys doing? Because she was picking up on the energy. She was curious. She was hanging out with it. And now she shows up at seance because she thinks it's fun. She thinks it's a lot of fun. But she grew up in Southern California, very strict Catholic Hispanic family. Anything to do with the paranormal was evil, was the devil. You know, they're the type that believe it's not grandma coming to say hi, but a demon in disguise to try to tempt your soul away. You know, just flat out.
Yeah.
And I hate to say it, but people who have those strict of expectations have a difficult time crossing over. Because when they're dead, they expect pearly gates. They expect St. Peter with the Book of Life. And when they get there, there's no angels flying around with harps. It's a whole different experience. And so they're like, well, I'm not dead. This isn't because I expect it to be like this. So she had a bit of a challenge crossing over because of that. But when she got to the other side, she realized, oh, this is what it's like. This is what it is. And she was told throughout her lifetime, seances and paranormal stuff, evil, evil, evil. Now she shows up on seance on the other side and she thinks it's hilarious. She thinks it's a lot of fun.
Oh my gosh. So you knew her on both sides?
I didn't know her in life. I only knew her in spirit form.
Oh.
And she was able to convey her life story and why seance is so much fun for her.
That's interesting. Tell me about runes, because I don't know anything about them. When I hear the word runes, I automatically think Outlander. I don't even know. I don't even know if those big stones are runes or not. But I don't know what. Tell me about it.
Runes are the written form of Old Norse and Proto-Norse languages. And because the Proto-Norse languages evolved into English, some of the English letters are actually runes.
Oh, okay.
Like F, S, T, C, B, they all come from runes. So if you were to look at a rune stone carved 1,000 years ago with a word like sister on it, I wouldn't even need to help you read it. You would still be able to read the word sister because the letters look exactly the same and it's spelled almost exactly the same and pronounced the same way as it was in Proto-Norse 1,000 years ago. And so at the very simplest level, that's runes, the written form of Old Norse languages. But runes are also ideograms. Every rune has a meaning to it, such as the rune Fehu. It looks like the letter F. It's where we get the letter F from, has the F phonetic value to it. But its meaning in Proto-Norse is cattle. Because Old Norse society was an agrarian society, and people who had ranches were the rich people. They were the people that had all the money and the power. So Fehu represented money and wealth. Eventually, the word Fehu became Fe, which became fee, meaning the money we pay. Okay. And so the rune Fehu deals with your investment of time, effort, energy, capital, any of that sort of thing that you put into something. So a student working to get their degree, their Fehu is the time that they spend in college. Somebody working to lose weight, you know, when they're watching their diet and they're exercising, their Fehu is that. But more importantly, Fehu is all about value. And so if you were to buy something, its initial Fehu is the purchase price. But as you hold onto that object more and more, it has an intrinsic value to it. That's its Fehu. But look at you. What is your Fehu? What is valuable about you? What is your value to the world? Some people, when they look at themselves and they see a Fehu, it's like at a low level. And they don't realize that the world around them is a reflection of their inner world. And they're like, oh, that's why people are treating me this way. That's why that's going this way. So when I work with runes, I'll help people tap in to their Fehu, for example, and we'll boost up that Fehu, we'll boost up that sense of value, their inner value. And it shifts their energy state so that the things around them reacted at the higher value. And so the external world becomes an inner world. It goes back to that manifestation work. We use runes to change your inner world, your belief set of what your worthiness is, what your value is, what your strength is. What are you aggressive and assertive about? What is your sense of wisdom? All of those things are runes without runic words. But those are the deeper mysteries inside us. And when you bump those up into an exalted state, the world around you reflects that back at you. In your deepest dreams and desires become manifest through runes.
That sounds so exciting. And it has nothing to do with Outlander. Do you watch Outlander? Do you know what I'm even talking about?
I think I've seen a couple episodes where a lady's in Scotland and she goes into a stone circle and goes back in time.
Yes.
To like the 1700s or something like
yes.
that.
Yes. Yes. It's so fun.
I've seen a few episodes.
Okay. You're in Colorado, and I wanted to talk about a couple paranormal things about Colorado. Do you get to do any like paranormal investigating or anything around there?
You know what? I've never really done investigating, but I teach paranormal investigators.
What do you teach them?
What I teach them is how to protect themselves and how to communicate so that they can be their own K2 monitor and their own protection source. But I've never had to do investigation because I don't need proof. I live it every day.
But you don't enjoy like going to places like because I love going to places that are supposedly haunted and staying there and trying to see if I will get an experience while I'm there.
Yeah, I've been to the Stanley Hotel.
Anything happen?
Definitely has some fun stuff going on there. I went there with a friend back in the days of digital cameras before it was integrated into the phone. And she was taking pictures all over the place. And when we were on when we went up the stairs, forgot what floor it was, but she took a picture down the hallway, showed me the picture of the apparition she had. Then her camera died and completely lost its memory and everything was unrecoverable. But yeah, there's definitely some fun stuff going on at Stanley. I haven't stayed overnight there, but I've been there a few times and it's fun to walk around that energy.
Yeah, I have stayed at the Stanley as well. I didn't have anything crazy happen. And at the time, I didn't even necessarily think that they were paranormal. But there were some things that happened that I look back on now and I'm thinking, oh, I think that may have been like trying to tell me something. Because like, it was just like little things. Like we were in a rush to get ready to go down to dinner to meet people in the restaurant there. And I was going to jump in the shower, but I wanted to curl my hair as soon as I got out. So to save time, I plugged my curling iron in and turned it on so it could get hot while I was in the shower. And I got out and I dried off, whatever, rushing around really quick, start to curl my hair. And the curling iron is cold. It never heated up. And I was like, ah, obviously I didn't like turn it on. So I turn it on really quick, run and get dressed, like come back in, start to do it again. And it's cold. again. Like, and I'm like, oh, old building, something's wrong with the electrical socket, you know, and my curling iron is broken. Like, I need a new curling iron. And I remember like stopping at a CVS to grab a new curling iron while we were on vacation. And then when I got home, the curling iron worked just fine. There was nothing wrong with the curling iron. And I'm almost like, wait, what? So looking back on it, I'm like, oh, it was little signs like that. And I was just too busy. Again, my thoughts are not there. I'm not thinking about it. I'm not listening to that. And I just wrote it off as something else.
Yeah, there's definitely something in the Stanley that messes with electronics. But you're doing the right thing. You are debunking the physical possibilities first before you go into doing the paranormal. So yeah, you were on the right page for that. But yeah, I will agree that was something.
Oh, I debunked it. I mean, I was like thinking of the wrong things all the way until I got home and got it and tried out the old curling iron again and found it worked just fine. Like, it never even occurred to me paranormal until like way later. And I was there to have a paranormal experience, and I still wasn't like, oh, this is paranormal.
That's, I think, part of our training is we're told to deny it too. But, you know, I still say debunk the physical, but I think part of our training is to deny it until nothing else. But that's okay, because my belief is maybe we have 100 unexplained instances, and then we look at it and we're like, oh, and then we 99% of them, right? They just turn out to be just normal, everyday, mundane things. But that 1%, that one time that it's an actual real thing, that gives it that actual weight. So I love that skepticism. I love that doubt, because when you can finally eliminate all of the other possibilities and you come to like, no, this is a verifiable paranormal experience, that makes it all the more magical.
It really does. And it's very rare that it happens. I know if you watch the ghost hunting shows or whatever, it seems like it happens way more often than it does. But like, even as somebody who like tries to put myself in these experiences and tries to do this all the time, it's still really rare when something does happen. And one time, I'm never know if I say it right, but I think it's called La Piracema, one of the original like California missions over here. It's a state park now. We went in there and I wanted something to happen. It was kind of like a stormy day, and we went into like the main like cathedral type thing, and they were getting ready to close up. Like, the park ranger didn't even charge us for parking because he's like, you know what, we're going to close in like 30 minutes. You girls just have a nice time. Like, go check things out or whatever. And there was another park ranger literally walking around with this like round thing of keys. She was like locking a million doors. And so my friend was like, oh my God, don't shut the door, because I don't want her to think nobody's in here and just like lock the door and lock us in here. So I'm like, okay, but I wanted to shut it because it's kind of cold outside, but I left the door open and I was like asking for things to happen. Like, can you give us a sign? And this kind of goes back what you were saying at the beginning, where like, you know, it asking for like knocking or like big things to happen, you know? I was like, can you give us a sign? And I had been doing a video recording, but then nothing was happening. So I switched off the video and I was just doing audio recording. And all of a sudden, the door, and it's like one of those really thick wood mission doors, from the inside slammed shut. And it scared me so bad because it echoes through that whole empty like cathedral. And I went, holy shit. And when you listen back to the audio recording, you hear like two notes of a flute play and then the door slam from the inside. So when you get like an amazing experience like that, it's like so exciting and so exhilarating. But then I'm greedy and then I immediately want them to do it again. Do it again.
Good. I love that you're doing that, because that's exactly what I tell paranormal investigators to do. Because if there is something that wants to be spooky, scary, or tricksy in the room, and it does something scary and you go, oh, you're feeding into it. But if you go, ooh, that was cool, do it again.
Yeah.
That you're accessing that playfulness. If it is something trying to be negative or awful, you're going to kind of poison it. It's going to like, but if what most likely is we're misinterpreting what's going on, because I'm going to jump too if a big heavy door slams. I will jump. I'm a big guy. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
But when you can laugh at it, you're like, cool, that's it. And maybe there's something there trying to communicate or contact you, something like a lost soul. That can happen. You know, somebody's stuck, or it could be a guide or a teacher or a loved one. When you have that affirmation, when you have that joy and that wonder, you're going to build that connection and you're going to scare away the negativity. So I love that you're able to do that and have fun with it, because that's exactly what I recommend people to do. You're so in tune to this stuff. It's great.
Well, I think too, like people say, oh, isn't that scary? Oh my God, I would have running out of there or whatever. And I tell people I'm not scared of this stuff at all, but that doesn't mean things don't scare me. Like when a door slams shut and you're not expecting it, that's going to be shocking and make you like your heart jump. But yes. Then once you realize what just happened, then like the excitement comes and you're like, oh no, I just got something and I want to do it. Now I want more. So yes. It's not scary that something slammed the door. It's just scary that a door slammed and took me by surprise.
Exactly.
Same thing too. I was saying this on this podcast before, like I'm not scared of this stuff, but sometimes it will find you when you're your most vulnerable. And for me, that's usually like when I'm sleeping, and it'll wake you up. And then I feel a little bit scared because I feel like I'm not ready, or I'm not in the right mind, or I'm not like, and I feel like they know that too.
You've got good beings around you, but you're absolutely right. Similarities attract and perpetuate. This is part of also why I do shadow work with clients, because if they're in a bad place, or if there's some lingering shadows from childhood, they may get a spirit attachment. They may get a shade attachment or a thought form that will reinforce that negativity over and over and over, to the point of like vices or addictions or behaviors that are destructive. But for the most part, it's going to be, for a lot of people, it's going to be pretty innocuous. It'll be just something spooky or scary, something to give you that creep out feeling. And for those cases, I tell people just to laugh, have fun with it. But you're right. They will find those moments maybe when you're most vulnerable, because, you know, similarities attract and perpetuate. We all have shadows. We all have things that we're working on. And when we buy into those shadows, sometimes when we listen to the shadows, when we let those shadows have more of a say than they need to, something could pick up and go, ooh, what are you doing over there? Let's do some more of that. Poke, 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 poke. And that's where we don't want to be, you know? And like you said, a lot of times too, you're just open and aware. And it could be like a guide or a person passing through that goes, oh, you're aware? Hey, let's talk. And it's like, oh, not right now.
Yeah. Well, I know like when, so my, the last time this happened to me was sort of recently. I was in Scotland. I was staying in Edinburgh. I was staying in this amazing hotel that's like, was built in like the 1500s, and it's known to be haunted, which is one of the reasons I wanted to stay there. And nothing happened while we were there, except one night I'm sleeping and something woke me up, and I don't remember hearing anything, definitely didn't see anything, but something woke me up, and I just knew that something had woken me up, like some sort of sound or something that I don't really recall what it was. And I looked around a little bit. I didn't see anything. I didn't hear anything, but it was a little off-putting enough for me to be like, to wake my husband up a little bit, just so I wasn't by myself. But then I also just kind of put it out there. Not right now. Like I'm not in the mood right now. Like I'm totally sleeping and just not right now. Catch me in the morning.
Setting those boundaries is so important. You know, setting that boundary, not here, not now. Definitely when I travel, I will put protection on the room. I'll set it up a sacred space so that things don't mess with me. And that's exactly the reason why, because we don't know what's going to be passing through. We don't know who was in that room before. We don't know the energy of the area. Sometimes the energy of the area is just ick. And so you put those little shields up and you get a good night's sleep no matter where you go.
Yeah. It leads me to my last question, because I know we're pretty much out of time, is you talked about paranormal protection and helping people with that and stuff. And I always ask people, like, do you carry protection with you or anything? Because I personally do not. But for me, it's a mindset. Like I go into a place and I go there with the intention of having an experience. And then when I'm leaving, I very much have the intention that, and now we're done.
I love it.
And it's not even like it is something I think about, but it's more just like, I just know this before I even go in, that this is how it's going to be and how things are going to go. And period. And so I don't even feel like, oh, I need all this protection or I need to sage or all this stuff at the end, because I already know there's nothing following me home because I already told them no before I even went there, is the feeling I have, you know?
That's why I'm going back to the Universal Consciousness Interface, the UCI. Because if you have sage, Palo Santo, if you have a cross, or teach people to use an Algiz rune, I'll use an Algiz rune for that, or any other symbol, all it's doing is shifting your mindset. It's putting you in a safe space because it's all consciousness. It's all mindset. But if you can do it without the tools, you can do it without the tools. Just like what you're doing, just what you're describing. And a lot of times when I teach seance, it's just a ritual to get people tuned in. There's no veil. It's just get people tuned in and learn those things. And eventually they just shift the mindset. Setting up those wards to protect your hotel room, it's just a mindset shift. Using these techniques that I teach the paranormal investigators, ultimately, just exactly what you described. I love it. I love that you have that awareness and that you're sharing that with the audience, because that's exactly what people need to hear more of, that they are empowered. So many times we are told that we're the victim of the paranormal, and that's never been the case. It's all co-creative. When you, like you just said, you determine what your mindset is, what the experience is going to be, you create that. You co-create that with those beings. I love it. You're doing so many good things. Your audience is learning so much from you. So that's awesome work that you're doing.
But did you just say there's no veil?
There's no veil.
What do you mean by that? Everyone talks about the veil and being thinner on certain days.
Isn't that fun? You know, we're told that the veil is thinnest at midnight or 3 a.m. It's now 3 a.m. So somehow it got pushed back 3 hours. But the reason why it used to be midnight or it used to be New Year's Eve is because it was liminal space between the one day and the next day, between one year and the next year. Crossroads, because you're between one road and the next road. Graveyards. None of that's true. We are spiritual and physical beings. So is the world around us. Spirits and energies are around us everywhere, all the time. When we do a seance, what we're doing is not opening the veil or parting the veil. You're using the veil as that metaphor, that psychological construct, so that you can tune in. When you go into a cemetery and you say, ooh, the veil's thinnest here, you're just tuning in. When it's midnight or 3 a.m. and you're having a paranormal experience, you're just tuning in. We just use the veil as an excuse. You are the veil. You've always been the veil. It's just a matter of tuning in or tuning out.
Oh, so interesting. I never thought of it like that before. I could go on and talk to you forever. I know we're out of time. Thank you so much for sharing all of this with us today. Tell everyone listening how they can take your classes, read your book, follow you on social media, all that good stuff.
Absolutely. My website is kaedric.com. It's spelled K-A-E-D-R-I-C-H, just kaedric.com. And if you look for me on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, just knowing my name is the key to unlock all of these doors for you. So just type my name in, you'll find me, and I'll be there. We can do one-on-one sessions. I've got online courses. I've got online classes. You know, I've got 6-week, 8-week shadow work courses. I've got a new one coming up for spiritually divergent people, like pagans and heathens and witches. So we've got lots of shadow work to do and lots of paranormal arts to awaken our soul with.
So fun. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of the Ghost Bunny Podcast. Thank you so much for listening, or thank you so much for joining me on my spooky adventures. And I look forward to sharing a new ghost story with you each week. Please subscribe to our podcast. You're always the first to know when a new episode is out, and follow us on social media at Ghost Bunny Podcast on Instagram for photos and sneak peeks, and at Ghost Bunny Podcast on YouTube for the video version of the podcast. Bye guys.